Malcolm, of a Farrakhan. He was strong, he was dynamic, he was charismatic, and I think that what you're saying is quite true. There was a message there that was different than Elijah's, and it may have indeed turned off some of the people who had been with Elijah before.
But with the changes he's made, he has to, he's going to have to continue defending himself. He's going to have to continue this kind of rhetoric, this kind of defense of himself. He seems relaxed, more so than I've ever seen him. Mm-hmm. To be honest about it, he seems confident. He seems sincere, and certainly he feels that the changes he's made, he had to do them, and I think he had to do them. The religion could not continue to go along as it did.
But he was almost challenging this audience, wasn't he? He said, "You want the good old days? You don't want me as your leader." The tone was very clear there. This is where I stand. This is where I am. You're not going to push me into anything else, and I'm not going backwards. So either you walk with me, or I'll keep on walking by myself.
Right. He was telling those who want to go back to the past, okay, go on. He was telling those who want to follow him into the future, come on, we're going with the new policies. I think he sincerely means it. But you're right. It was a challenge to both. Those who want to dwell in the past, and to those who want to, with him, walk in the future.
There was another undertone to all of this, I think, that is somewhat belied in the interview that we'll hear shortly with him. He clearly attacks his father's message in this speech. When he speaks of the lies and foolishness of the past, when he speaks of Jacob's false history, he's speaking of those things that his father did teach, and that's a pretty bold thing to do with this audience.
Yeah, he's been doing it in the meetings in Chicago, but it is obvious it's a put-down, a complete put-down of his father's policies. And he spoke derisively of the past. He ridiculed the past. For example, he told the audience that he said Elijah, and his leaders were fishermen, and you were the fish. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what you were, the fish.
Mm-hmm.
And it's to me, seemingly like rubbing it in. Look, here we are today. Forget the past. The past was wrong. He even threw the word corruption in. Corrupt. There was corruption in the past.
But I wonder if he's not attempting to exchange the gift of superiority that, false though it may be, that his father had laid on his followers. I think there's another strain of the same kind of thing here. There's a whole chosen people theme that ran throughout this speech. He was saying, yes, you were fools. My father even knew you were fools. You were fish. You were gullible. Mm-hmm. You ate up Jacob's history, and you dwelled on the material things. But at the same time, he's saying, you are the only people in the world who are morally fit to carry on, not only for Black America, not only for the United States, but in fact for the world.
Right. After he put the audience, the followers down, for example, he mentioned he told them that you were taken, you were had. The part about the reason Elijah didn't allow whites in because he was embarrassed of you, that you might embarrass him at least. But then after he put them down, later he had to raise them back up and said, okay, with me, you are the saviors of the world now.
That's right.
We can lead the world down the moral path, he told them.
Well, earlier today we had the opportunity to speak about some of these things with the Honorable Wallace D. Muhammad here in our studios. And I think we're going to see that tape now. Your father was called the most powerful Black man in America. And I think that the same might well be said of you. How does that kind of power and responsibility make Wallace D. Muhammad, the individual, feel?
Well, I've never felt that I had so much power. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad had power, but I don't feel that I have power. I have influence in our community and among many people, but I don't interpret that as power. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he never thought of himself as a man with so much power. He thought of the community as a powerful community, and he said that Allah is the power, you know.
In the last 28 months, the changes that you've made in what was called the Nation of Islam, now the World Community of Islam in the West, have really struck right at the heart of your father's teachings, haven't they?
Well,
how would your father feel about the things that you've done?
Well, I can tell you how he felt about the things I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
He felt wonderful. I made a speech, this speech was taken to be a troublemaking speech by some of the members in the Chicago staff.
When was this?
This was in late 74.
Mm-hmm.
And the speech was brought to, the tape, the recording, was brought to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And he listened to it very attentively, and I was there. I was asked to be present. And he seemed nervous at the start of the speech. But as he began to listen, he relaxed. And at one point, he jumped up out of his seat, and he said, "That's my boy. That's my boy." He said, "The boy's got it. The boy's got it."
Then you don't think he would have been dismayed by some of the...
No, he would,
the new things you've brought in.
He would be my best follower if he was here.
Mm-hmm. How about the ban on whites? He had been pretty positive on that, hadn't he?
Yes, but he opened the way for this change.
Mm-hmm.
In his last address, national address in Chicago, he asked his followers to respect all people, to respect white people. He said if they can treat you like a human being, you treat them like human beings.
But isn't it a far cry from respecting someone as a human being to, in fact, admitting them to an organization that had racial separation as one of its major tenets?
Well, actually, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was never a separatist in that sense. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad many times sat with invited Caucasians to his dining table. They sat with him, they laughed.
But
they
not
ate
to
together.
His mosque.
Well, yes. If you understand as I do that some Arabs are Caucasians, you have had even a blue-eyed Arab at his dining table.
Okay, let's move on from this for a moment. You say your father would have been pleased with what you've done.
Yes.
And undoubtedly, there are many others within the movement who are pleased. And I think particularly it would be fair to say that the intellectuals within the World Community of Islam have long been awaiting the kinds of things that you've brought in. On the other hand, the Nation of Islam always appealed to the lower socioeconomic classes. Mm-hmm. You've recruited out of the prisons, off the street corners. Mm-hmm. How does that typical follower of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad feel about what Wallace Muhammad is doing now? Aren't you forcing them, in fact, to unlearn much of what they had been taught by your father?
Those that I speak to directly, they're not forced to unlearn anything. They're just forced to learn the language that they were using, that we were speaking. The language of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's society was a symbolic language. That is the religious language. Was a symbolic language, and the idea of original man and the idea of concept of God and devil, these concepts the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was propagating in the community were religious concepts, and he had given them to us in symbolic language.
Are you telling us now that he did not literally mean that the Caucasian race was one of devils?
In the sense that they were evil?
Yes, naturally.
Cruel, wicked people.
Evil, cruel,
those
wicked.
Who were guilty of the crimes that they, that committed against slaves, the slaves in America, the lynchings, and all of these evils. Certainly, he identified that as coming from evil, wicked person, soul, and to him that was the devil.
Yes, but wasn't his indictment of white people far broader than that? It wasn't just directed against those who were guilty of crimes.
It was
for the purpose
of separating. That's all.
I don't understand what you mean by separating.
Separating. It was used to force separation, the separation of the races. He himself never treated the Caucasian individual like he was the devil. There are many Caucasians that I could name who have had friendly associations with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad when he was with us, and they will tell you they weren't treated like they were devils.
Well, then why the need to project what in fact was, I think, a strongly racist position as concerned all white people, not just white people who were guilty of crimes?
The Honorable Elijah Muhammad's society, community, was a community carrying out the social reform teachings of his teacher, Mr. Farad Muhammad, Master Farad Muhammad. And those social reform teachings depended on separation of the races. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, like his teacher, felt that the poor, down and out people of the black community, of the black communities, weren't sophisticated enough.
Are you saying then that your father always knew that white people were not by birth devils, and yet he said it because he felt that's what his people needed?
Well, I know he didn't identify a devil in white skin.
That is what he said, isn't it?
That's what he said. It was necessary, it was a strategy, and he used it. He had to use it.
So then there were things that he said that you feel he didn't really believe, that
well,
he may have said in the interest of the people.
He believed it, but his teacher taught him that the human being becomes a devil in his mind first.
Okay.
And then when the mind becomes a devil, well, naturally the body follows the mind.
You at this point don't think that racial separation, obviously, is a necessity.
No.
It's obviously something that, in fact, you've condemned.
No, we can't have the separation of races in the United States. This is one nation. Makes trouble.
That's another big change, isn't it, between what your father had spoken of and what you speak of.
Yes,
your father had asked for a separate piece of land on which blacks would build a separate nation. You don't any longer speak for that.
In the later years, the last, I would say, 3 or 4 years of Honorable Elijah Muhammad's rule among us, he himself did not hardly ever mention that the idea of separation, separate states. He himself dropped the idea. And he dropped it because there was no need, real need for it anymore. The federal government took a position to defend the rights of Bilalian people, or black people, and the signs saying white here and black there were taken down in the South, and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad appreciated that, and he stopped asking for separate states.
You speak of the U.S. government. Shortly after you took over, there was an interview that your brother Herbert conducted in the Bilalian News, and which was then, of course, Muhammad Speaks. I believe that he asked you how you felt about asking the U.S. government for aid, and you said that you, in fact, would seek aid, or were not opposed to seeking aid from the U.S. government. Have you sought such aid? Have you asked the U.S. government for money, and what's their reaction been?
No, I have not. I'm not opposed to the idea. But I'm opposed to our community asking for aid. I accept the idea.
Of asking for aid?
That's right.
But you don't intend to do it?
No.
How can you do things like build hospitals, build large urban renewal projects? Can this really be done from money from within the black community, or isn't there some government funding that's got to come in if you're going to have any success?
No, I don't think so. There are plenty persons, citizens, private citizens, who have money, plenty of money, and if your programs are worthwhile and warrant large contributions, I think some of these wealthy Americans in out of our community and also in the Bilali, in our black community, will make contributions.
This takes us to another source of funds, real source of funds and potential source of funds, and that is the Arab states.
Yes.
With whom you have, I think it's fair to say, cemented a relationship since your father's death. Some of the beginnings of relationship that I think your father had planted, you have made firm. As a result, the government of Sharjah has given $16 million to build a new masjid or mosque in Chicago. Is this an isolated incident, or can we expect that there will be more and more Arab money coming in? And I think most important, what are the implications for the entire black community if the Arab states use the American black community as a source of funneling funds into the United States?
Yes. Well, first I have to correct your statement when you said that the Sharjah has given $16 million. Sharjah hasn't given $16
million. I read it in Bilalian News.
Well, that's not correct.
Okay.
Sharjah, His Highness, the Sultan, Muhammad al-Qasimi, bin Muhammad al-Qasimi, he pledged
$16,000. $16,000?
Yeah, I mean, He pledged to $16 million, but not from himself. This was a pledge just to work for us to raise funds in that area.
Oh, I see. So you have not actually been given the $16 million, merely his pledge that he would raise it?
That he would do his best to raise the $16 million for the building of the construction of the Bilalian Mosque, the Bilali Mosque. So far, we received from Sharjah less than $1 million.
Do you expect the other 15 or so to be coming?
Not from Sharjah, perhaps from others. He himself, I believe, used his influence to get Abu Dhabi, a neighboring state in the Emirates, to contribute $1 million. So we received $1 million from Abu Dhabi, and we received a half a million from Sharjah for the construction of the Bilal Mosque.
Is there going to be more coming in the future, not just for this project, but is there going to be Arab money funneled into this country through the Royal Community of Islam?
Yes. I believe so. I hope so. Saudi Arabia, who has much more money than Abu Dhabi and Sharjah, has yet to make a contribution. And I hope we
have
receive...
Have you asked?
I have not asked, but I have accepted.
Mm-hmm.
They asked me.
They said,
how can we assist you? So I told them that we were building the Bilali Mosque, we're doing certain things, and they said, we will help you. I said, thank you.
In his autobiography, the late Malcolm X spoke of an extraordinary closeness and trust between the two of you. Of course, Malcolm had fallen out with your father before his death, Malcolm's death in 1965, and I think it's fair to say that a number of bitter feelings remained within the Nation of Islam toward Malcolm. On at least some people's part. You've now renamed the Harlem Mosque or Masjid in Malcolm's honor. Mm-hmm. And some observers of your movement even claim that you have Malcolmized the Nation of Islam, that the changes you've made are many of the things that Malcolm himself in that year from 64 to 65 would have favored. How do you respond to that characterization?
Well, if it's Malcolmized and it's true religion, if it's the religion of Islam, then I don't mind people who don't understand that it's just the religion of Islam saying it's Malcolmized.
I see. So you don't, you would not object to the characterization, but you think that in fact
it's not correct.
You're not returning to
it's
Malcolm, but rather returning to
right the characterization
the orthodox
is not correct
form of Islam.
Right, that's right.
Mm-hmm. In Malcolm's autobiography, again, he predicted he would be killed, and at one point he clearly states, "Any death talk for me could have been approved of, if not actually initiated, by only one man." What is your reaction to suggestions that orders for Malcolm's assassination may have come from high up in the Nation of Islam?
It's possible that someone could have expressed the desire to see Malcolm dead. But I don't believe that there was any orders to assassinate Brother Malcolm, Minister Malcolm, coming from the Honorable Elijah, late Honorable Elijah Muhammad.
You yourself are now a powerful black leader of what remains quite a controversial group. Obviously, you must have thought of the possibility that you yourself could be the object of a deranged mind, the target of assassination. Do you fear assassination?
No.
Why?
Simply because there's no need for me to fear assassination. Some Girl Scouts, it was just young Girl Scouts, they were camping, and some deranged persons came and just raped them and slaughtered them. This happened less within the week, I believe.
But you would obviously be a different kind of target than those Girl Scouts.
Yes,
there are those who might
but I don't
aim
think,
at you quite specifically, aren't
yes.
there?
In these days, I don't think a man like myself is any more exposed to, subject to be assassinated or murdered or what have you, than average citizen.
Can't help wondering, too, what it was like for you, for your brothers, for your sisters, to grow up as the children of a man who was despised by some, misunderstood by some, and practically worshipped as a prophet by others.
Mm-hmm.
That must have made your upbringing unique and different. How was it?
Well, it was unique and different. We grew up with, a reverence of Honorable Elijah Muhammad, that I would say was next to the reverence for God. To us, he was a father, a physical father, but also a spiritual man, almost a divine man. I would say a divine man.
Wasn't that difficult? Most of us have problems dealing with our parents when we just look on them as ordinary human
yes,
beings.
That's true.
It must have been very hard.
Well, it was. Because many times we wanted to express ourselves in a certain way, but we knew it wouldn't be proper. Many times we were afraid just in his presence, nervous in his presence, just because we had committed a sin, maybe a little small sin earlier in the day. And now we're in his presence, we even thought maybe he could read our minds.
Did you?
Yes.
Are your brothers and sisters with you in the world community of Islam today?
Yes, they are. Exactly.
All of them?
All of them.
There are no defectors
except,
at this point?
Except the youngest one, Akbar. And I heard at the dinner that was given by Herbert Muhammad in my honor in Chicago just a couple of weeks ago, July 7th, pardon me, June 7th, that Akbar... He said to some of the guests there that, he said, Wallace is also my leader. That's what I'm told. That's what I was told. And that made me very proud to hear Akbar say I'm his leader.
Of course. Excuse me, you yourself had been in and out of the Nation of Islam. You had at times defected yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yet here we find that after your father's death in 1975, you succeeded your father,
yes,
rather than one of your brothers or one of your father's other lieutenants. Mm-hmm. Why did that happen?
It happened because the leader himself had really prepared the way for me.
Had he designated you as his successor?
He had said that, and on several occasions he had said that to his to large gatherings, and the word was spread throughout the community. All of the old leaders of the movement, they knew that. Well, they felt that if anything should happen to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, that his son Wallace Muhammad would be the one.
There had been, as you well know, predictions of a bloody scramble for power when your mm-hmm. father died. Lewis Lomax had made that prediction. Sirach Lincoln had made that prediction. And yet it seems to the outsider as if the transition was very smooth.
Yeah.
Not only was there no bloodshed, but in fact things seemed to fall into place mm-hmm. quite easily. Was there an undercurrent going on that the rest of us haven't seen?
Yes. And it was my special place that had been given to me in the movement by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Well, even by Mr. Farid Muhammad. Mr. Farid Muhammad, he named me before I was born. And this was taken to be to have some real special significance, spiritual significance. He instructed my mother to take very good care, special care of me. So this is known in the family, and old leaders in the organization knew this. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad says this son is different from all the others. So they weren't aware of the strong support that I had been given, or the strong help that I had been given by Master Farid Muhammad and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad.
Master Farid had been called Allah,
yes,
by your father.
Yes.
And your father had in fact called himself the last messenger of Allah.
Yes, that's true.
You've now changed all of that. And yes, both Master Farid
mm-hmm.
and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad are now simply revered as special teachers.
That's right.
How has that been accepted, and what made you make what is really quite a radical change in theology? Mm-hmm.
The language that Honorable Elijah Muhammad used was symbolic language. There are organizations that take on a religious language, take on spiritual language to describe their positions, even their activities sometimes. But Honorable Elijah Muhammad used a lot of religious language, but he didn't use it in the true religious sense. He used it to bring our people into a new mind, a social mind. But knowing that the Ilalians are Afro-American people were more spiritual or more religious than they were anything else, and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad used religious language. But exactly what he was doing was bringing about social reform, a mental awakening to the need for new social reform, he was not trying to establish religion in the true sense. He told his people, I'm not teaching you religion now. He says someone behind me will teach you the
now
religion.
That is your role then?
Yes, that's right.
You used the word Bilalian.
Mm-hmm.
Bilalian is now the term that you use to designate all black people. Bilal was an Ethiopian follower of the Prophet Muhammad, wasn't he?
Yes.
Why have you decided to make what may to certain people be a very alien sounding word
mm-hmm.
stand for what has been accepted as traditional and accepted language? Black was something that was fought for a long time in the black community,
mm-hmm.
to be called black.
Yes.
Here you've said, let's not call ourselves black anymore, let's be Bilalians. What's that all about?
Well, I'm not exactly saying let's not call ourselves black anymore. Those who are black, I would like to see them calling themselves black until they get rid of all the problems that they may have with blackness or whiteness, etc. I'm just asking us to get rid of troublemaking terms. And I think black is a troublemaking term.
In other words, a Bilalian could be white? Is that what you're saying?
No. We have some that are so white, I don't see why they're called black.
I see.
Yes.
I see. Let's bring it up to date a little bit. In a recent magazine article, Askia Mohammed, the former editor of Mohammed Speaks, spoke of the terrorist Hanafi siege of three Washington, D.C. buildings, and he claimed that you had suggested taking 500 of your followers into those three buildings and freeing the hostages by force. Is there any truth to that?
No, there's no truth to that. I would never take the authority that is not mine go and try to relieve the hostages. I went and I called the mayor in Washington, and I sought their help. My religion teaches me that whenever you go into the area of authority that belongs to others, call on them and let them know your intentions.
So you were there to help?
And be invited.
I see.
Yes.
And you were not invited to help?
No, I was not invited, but I was there waiting in case I was invited, in case they would have needed me for some reason. I was there waiting and willing.
Let's turn to the Middle East, if we can. The Arab-Israeli conflict. What is your position? What